Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Oh, Miles here.
Your Owl Post for the week is freshly delivered. I am just one of the hosts here, Matthew Rushing, and joining me as she is always, the ever-vescent, ever-joyful, ever-lovely Drea Kaufman. Drea, how are you?
Hello! Hi, everyone. I'm doing pretty good. Feeling
awesome.
Just telling Matt I'm feeling a little of the pregnancy heat sweats right now with the weather here, and it's finally
starting.
You are
in Phoenix during monsoon season now.
Yeah, so it's all starting to kind of catch up to me. So it's getting a little rough, but you know, I'm always excited to come talk Harry Potter. So you know, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter how hot it is.
So what happens if you're pregnant and you take Polyjuice Potion?
That's a great question. I wonder if Rowling ever thought about that.
I don't know. We should ask her.
I wonder if you just are still
Dear
pregnant.
J.K. Rowling, what happens if you're pregnant and you take Polyjuice Potion?
You just are like Crab and Goyle, but you're like, the baby's still squirming in you, so you're like really uncomfortable. Because we learn later it lets you change genders. So, I mean, why not?
Yeah. I mean, there you go.
That's not an important detail I ruined for anyone.
No,
so.
Not at all. But anyway, I'm so excited to be here to really continue to dive into this book. And, you know, I think the Chamber of Secrets unfairly gets, I don't know, it feels like it has a bad rap almost, but I like this book. Like, I don't dislike any of the Harry Potter books anyway, but I feel like this one is even better on this reread. Are you thinking that too? Are you feeling that at all?
Or? I think I'm feeling that this book is way better than this movie. I think it gets a really bad rap on a movie level.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I'm feeling like a lot of the things that have to get cut to make it kind of a good streamlined plot, good streamlined plot for a movie, you miss and you want.
That is true.
So
that
I
is
think,
true. And
I think that's what I'm feeling.
Yeah, that's really interesting because I've always really liked this movie because it's faithfulness to the book. And a lot of people hate that. That's really interesting.
It doesn't change any of the plot at all like some of the others do. It doesn't make any big drastic changes at all, but
yeah,
it's also, it omits a lot of things because what the original movie omitted and
yeah,
you know, like we talked about the decision to leave ghosts out of stuff for the most part, you know, so
yes,
you know, it leaves out a lot of stuff like that, that I think makes the book that much more rich.
Yeah,
it doesn't
absolutely
change anything, but I definitely think that the book is much richer than the movie is.
Yeah, I think that you're so right to point out that there's so much that happens in these books that obviously can't be in the movie. And part of that adds a layer of realness to the story for the characters that doesn't always get to play out in the films because they just don't have time for it. And it adds a complexity to them. And as you said, I think just a richness to the story that really rounds everything out. And I think it just goes to show when you read the books is that Rowling knows what she's doing. So, before we dive into our chapter this week of the Polyjuice
As we just
potion,
did.
Yeah, as we were just like pontificating about how awesome, you know. You could find
Ooh,
us.
Ooh, pontificating.
I know.
I need
love
a little
that
bell
word
so I can give you a ding whenever you use a great big word, like obfuscate.
Wow. Well, let's not do that to the issues here, but I don't want to I can't even say the word.
Obfuscate.
Well, I don't want to belabor the point, but people can find us everywhere. You can find us on Twitter at @JoinNerdParty. You can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/TheNerdParty. You know what? Both of those places are great places to share the shows as we post them there and interact with us too. So do that. We love having interaction with the listeners. It's so much fun hearing what you think about the different chapters or where you think we were wrong, that kind of stuff. You know, I mean, isn't Twitter just a big place for people to go wrong? I mean, that's, yeah. You can also find
us
on,
or to send us pictures of mugs that,
yes, like that was awesome.
That really
totally,
was.
Totally want that mug. And so, you can find us on thenerdparty.com And if you'd like to send us an email, you can go to thenerdparty.com/contact, choose a show, choose Outposts, and that'll come to Dre and I. And last but not least, if you're over on Apple Podcasts, which is the main provider and the really the place where most people find their podcasts, if you give us a star rating review over there, that really does help other people find the show. And honestly, I can say this with all sincerity. The last few reviews, I've really noticed there being some upticks in the people downloading the show. And so your reviews are helping more people find Owlposts. So we really appreciate that. And we just ask you to help us out. Spend a couple minutes. Give us a star rating review. No matter what the star rating was or what the review says, we'll shout you out in the show. Because we really appreciate people spending the time to do that for us. Because we know it takes a couple minutes. And we really do appreciate it. So now, Drea, I really like this chapter, and I'm going to say really a lot because I really do, and there's so much in it, and part of that is being in Dumbledore's office for the first time, and I love that Harry is looking around this office, and the way she describes it is that if he wasn't so worried, he'd be so pleased to just stand there and, like, look around. And yeah. I love the way that she's describing this offense because it sounds so magical and wonderful, and yet Harry's scared for his life at this point.
Yeah, and at the beginning, he's super worried, and it's like he gets swept up and doesn't realize what's happening to him as it's happening, which I found really interesting. A little confusing. I feel like I want to go back and read the chapter before and this chapter, like, concurrently and just see if that flow is a little different, because I feel like he should be terrified, because I remember I was terrified and I was like, holy crap, they're not gonna believe him. And then all of a sudden he's just like in awe of this room and puts the hat on. He's worried about getting in trouble, but he still touches something in the office, and like, and we kind of get a glimpse back to it with Phoenix and or with Fox dying, but I still felt it was a little weird. And so I want to just read them back to back again to see if I'm reading too much into that. and that's just me projecting what I would be feeling versus like what actually kind of makes sense. But
I feel as though the way that she's describing the situation, it's that Harry can't help but feel like so curious about this new office. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the fact that you've got all the portraits of these, you know, headmasters and all these amazing things on little tables. I mean, there are deals that are smoking there. You know, there's the sorting hat, which Harry has the whole conversation with about whether or not he was put in the right house in the first place, which the hat is like, well, I stand by what I said. And Harry's like, you're wrong. And I love Harry. Like, he's so determined to not be a Slytherin. And yeah. I think that she does a great job of using that to just kind of point out Harry's difference. You know, like, the fact that he feels like that says a lot about him as the character that he has inside.
Yeah, I thought that was really interesting that we didn't actually get to hear what the sorting hat had to say. You know, Harry shut it down real fast and was like, nope, I'm not listening. And I think that's really big of Harry to be like, you know what? It's almost like halfway through he realized, nope, I don't really care what you have to say. I know you're wrong. I know we decided correctly. Like, this is what it's going to be. It doesn't matter what you tell me. So I thought that was really interesting that he was curious at first and then kind of regretting his curiosity part of the way through and being like, okay, fine. Nope. I'm just going to do me and I know I did it right. So we're just going to let it go.
There's something about Harry that he is very clear about who he wants to be and what side of the aisle basically he wants to fall on. And this is where I think the fact that he grew up in the household that he did has the impact, because the last thing he wants to be seen as is basically Dudley. And every Slytherin that he's met is basically Dudley.
For sure.
And, you know, the Dursleys in general. And he wants no part of that. And I think that when we've talked before about the psychology of Harry Potter, I think that psychology is so smart of her, and it's an unintended consequence for Dumbledore not realizing that, you know, he would be treated as such. I don't think Dumbledore ever thought leaving him with his aunt and uncle would turn into the hell that Harry experienced for those 11 years.
I will disagree with that.
Well, we'll talk about that later because it comes into play somewhere else and we can't get into it too much.
We can't get into it without ruining
the future.
We'll put
a pin in that argument.
Yeah.
We're going to just...
We'll just agree to disagree at this moment and leave it at that.
But I think that it really does have this lasting effect, obviously, on who Harry becomes. And that's why he's just so adamant with the hat. Like, no, you're absolutely 100% wrong. That's not me at all. But I do love here that that actually is something that is going to come into play later on. And we don't understand why right now. But this hat business will mean something. And I love that she uses that. I mean, and she's planting this seed that you're going to want to remember later on, folks. You're just going to want to put that in the old noggin there.
We're going to file that one away under importante.
Like our argument?
Yeah.
Oh. And then this whole thing with Fox dying... It just cracks me up. Like, she explains Harry, like, looking frantically around for a glass of water to put on it and everything. Like,
and there's
just
nothing
hysterical.
He can do.
Oh, man. And then Dumbledore's like, oh, you know, so sorry you had to see him on a burning day. You know, he's usually rather beautiful. Apparently now he's just, like, nasty and ugly that he's all burned to a crisp. It's like fried chicken. Fried Phoenix, you know, extra crispy.
That's gross. So I gotta say that when I'm looking at some of the stuff that's happening to Harry, particularly the stuff that's facilitated by Dumbledore, right? He knows Harry didn't grow up in the wizarding world. Like, he knows that Harry doesn't know what a phoenix is, you know, some of these things. I feel like there's just a little bit of Dumbledore that's that adult in all of us when a kid does something really dumb or learns something and gets really afraid by it, where we think it's hilarious. Like, we're just like, yeah, he totally did that. Like, there's a part of us that, like, Dumbledore walks in and knows Harry's freaked out because he sees that Fox is gone, and there's a part of Dumbledore that's like, let's see how long I can keep him going. Like, there's a little masochist in there. There's just a little bit. And it's that really human quality that I really like Dumbledore's character for that little bit of humanity that he's a really great person, you know, wizard, but he's got that, like, slightly evil streak. I kind of like
it. Well, and I think that on top of that, exactly what you're saying, you know, when he comes in and just kind of explains all about phoenixes for the audience, obviously, too,
right,
those that are reading, but he's doing it for Harry's benefit because he understands that Harry doesn't know what this is. And I really like that, understanding who this character of Fox is going to be important. And she uses that. And I really, really like the way in which she puts all these puzzle pieces and then, you know, assembles them by the end of the book and then by the end of the series, making a larger puzzle. And it's just, it's so cool. And I also, one of the fun things here too is watching the friendship that Harry has with Hagrid, and Hagrid, you know, barging into the office and yelling at Dumbledore about how he's worried to swear in front of the ministry that it's not Harry and everything. And Dumbledore, I almost feel like Dumbledore's just got his hand in his face, like, oh, Hagrid, well, it's fine.
He keeps interrupting. Like, Hagrid's like, no, let me tell you. And he's like, Hagrid! Like,
yeah.
I wish that had been in the movie. I really do, because I would love to have seen. I just feel like that's the moment that Dumbledore just, like, lost his, you know, a little bit. Like, he lost his cool and his exterior and sort of snapped.
Yeah, and it's part of it, I think, is because it ruins kind of a moment between Harry and Dumbledore, because he has him in the office because he doesn't believe that he caused what happened. He doesn't believe he attacked these students, but he does feel like that there's something that Harry's not telling him.
He knows there's something Harry's not telling
him. Yeah. And Harry won't tell him. And I do think, I wonder, you know, if Hagrid doesn't barge in, does Harry maybe, is he maybe a little bit more open to say something? And is that moment kind of take away the moment that they were having about, you know, Fox and everything, creating that level of comfort, and then it's gone because Hagrid barges in and kind of ruins that. And
is this that moment in Law and Order where they're about to get the suspect to confess?
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden the lawyer, his lawyer's here.
Like. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. and it's interesting too, to just watch Harry's thought process of thinking through, you know, hearing voices isn't good and all of these things. And it's almost as if Harry doesn't want to look bad in front of Dumbledore. Like, he wants to be someone that this kind of almost like father type figure will have trust in and like respect for and like all those kind of things. And he just doesn't want to look bad in front of his, you know, what I think is, in some ways they just already start to have this special connection, and he's just not there yet, you know, to really totally trust Dumbledore as part of the inner circle, basically, for himself.
Yeah, I think you hit on it there with the trust thing. I get the very distinct impression that Harry is convinced. Harry's still not entirely convinced that he's not actually at fault for this in some way. Like, he knows he didn't consciously do anything, and he knows, you know, he did his. He knows he didn't go out of his way to hurt anybody, and he never would if he had a choice, but there's still a part of him that's not entirely convinced he didn't actually do it, and that he's not actually going crazy because he's hearing voices. And I think there's a part of him that's just not willing to admit that to someone he doesn't trust, like, entirely yet. And,
well, and it's not something that he's completely talked about all the way with Ron or Hermione either.
Right.
So,
and you have to think, like, Harry has to get the impression that Dumbledore isn't telling him the entire truth either. And so when you know someone's not being honest with you, it makes you less likely to be honest with them. And I think Dumbledore and Harry get that trust eventually, but I think right now we're still so early in their relationship that, you know, he admires him and he respects him, but I don't know that he wholly trusts him enough to be like, yeah, and by the way, what I'm about to tell you could make me look like I'm absolutely crazy. And until he kind of feels more comfortable with what it is and can kind of explain it, I don't think he would share it with anybody, let alone, you know, he might share it with Hagrid, and that's about it. Only because he knows Hagrid will just be brutally honest with him with whatever it is. So, you know, I feel like Dumbledore thinks Hagrid ruined it, but if anything, if he kind of reined Hagrid in, he might have actually been able to get the answer out of Harry.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, Harry leaves, and I love the way that the twins have responded to this by, like, following him around, Harry around everywhere, announcing, "Make way for the heir of Slytherin, make way!" You know, just like, and what it's so great about it is the way in which it's making Harry feel. Like, it's making him feel better what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that is because it's apparently pissing Malfoy off, and the way in which, you know, he's not liking this attention for Harry, I guess. And I just, the whole thing, I can just imagine playing out in the film. You know, Percy's pissed off about it too. And apparently Ginny doesn't find it amusing either.
Well, yeah. Who's going to blame Ginny there?
Yeah, yeah. But I love it because it says, you know, Harry didn't mind. It made him feel better that Fred and George at least thought the idea of his being the heir of Slytherin was quite ludicrous.
Yes.
And he said that, you know, their antics seemed to aggravate Malfoy, which, you know, always a plus.
I think there's a part of him too that likes seeing Percy a little rattled. You know, he wants to be respectful for Percy's status, you'll see throughout the chapter and kind of throughout the book. But I think at the same time, he also kind of likes to see his feathers ruffled a little bit. You know, he likes when someone else kind of pokes at Percy and he can kind of get the enjoyment out of it. As long as he's not the one being disrespectful, he'll kind of chuckle along. So,
well, this is where we get to Christmas, and something that we didn't know before now, but apparently girls can go into the boys' dormitories. Because Hermione runs into the boys' dormitory to wake up the boys. And Ron's like, Hermione, you're not supposed to be in here.
Like, see, and I got just the impression the only way that's possible is because it's Christmas and there's like nobody else around.
I guess. I think it may come up later on in the series. And I think the reason she gives is because that doesn't happen with girls. You know, like, girls aren't in there to do bad stuff, which I'm thinking to myself.
So boys can't sneak into girls' rooms?
Yeah, boys can't sneak into the girls, but the girls can sleep in the boys. I was thinking to myself, you know, plenty of girls, you know, willing to do some stuff, you know? Just saying.
Like, yeah. I don't know that stereotype holds up.
Yeah, I don't. It doesn't.
Yeah, good try, though.
But I thought that was funny, and that the whole time, you know, they're enjoying Christmas, but they're really focused on the Polyjuice potion. It's ready. It's time. And they've worked out this, you know, master plan of how to, you know, get the parts of Cragman Goyle that they need. And what I love is Hermione gets apparently this glint in her eye, not unlike apparently Professor McGonagall sometimes had,
that
which
was
is
my
like
favorite
this
part.
Devilish. I just imagine Hermione with this like devilish glint in her eye. It just cracked me up.
That is by far my favorite part of this whole chapter. Is just
isn't
the
it great?
Comparison because you know you get a little bit of that McGonagall every once in a while. And you're like, all right, she's more of a, you know, a BA than I ever thought she was. But now, like, Hermione's getting that, and it's, like, rubbing off on her, and you're like, yes. Like, yeah. I don't know. I guess I apparently just really want to see these, like, super perfect characters be slightly corrupted. But it's just so great. Like, mm-hmm. So great to see. That part made me happy. And I'd completely forgotten about it, like, about that happening. So I was like, yes.
Well, and it's capped off by Ron saying a line that should have been in the film, which is, have we ever heard of a plan where so many things could go wrong?
Yes, like, right.
That is fantastic.
Yes. Well, and I love that it's Ron is the one who's like, hey, guys, this seems like a bad idea. Like, when in just the last book, it's Hermione going, hey, guys, we're going to get in trouble. Now it's like they've completely flip-flopped. And she's like, bring on the pain. And he's like, hey, guys, this sounds like a bad idea.
Do you think that part of that has to do with Ron understanding just a little bit more of what can actually go wrong with spells and potions better than Hermione and Harry at this point? Like, you know, he's been in the wizarding world. He gets what could happen with magic if you don't do it just right.
No. I think it's that Ron's a little more of a scaredy cat than the rest of them. And I think it's just that, you know, Hermione doesn't feel like this is going to get them in trouble, you know?
Right.
I think she doesn't think like any teacher is going to believe this is happening. So like they're not going to get in school trouble for this, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I think Ron's just kind of afraid of anything, you know, one because of that howler at the very beginning of the book, right? Because of the car, he already knows he's kind of on thin ice with the family already. And maybe in that sense, he knows more of the wizarding world and knows like, mm-hmm. Getting in trouble with the Malfoy family might be a really bad idea. So I think it's more that he's afraid than he understands the consequences of it. I mean, they're what, like 12, 13? Like they don't understand the consequences of what they're doing at all yet. But I think it's more that Hermione's convinced they're not going to get in trouble at school. And he's convinced that this could be like they could piss off a lot of people and he doesn't want to deal with that. Mm-hmm. So I think it's more fear driven for him this time. And she's less goody two shoes driven like it was last time. But it's still a funny like sort of flip that they have.
Oh, it's absolutely phenomenal. And I really enjoy the whole scene of them, you know, turning into the kids and the way that, you know, they are able to trick Crab and Goyle with, you know, just putting food out on a banister. Then, of course, they pick it up and start eating it because they're stupid.
In all parts, in all scenarios, the movie, the book, whatever, I do not know why you would eat food floating, not in the Great Hall. I just, if someone out there can explain to me why a floating chocolate cake in front of your face screams, eat me, as a great idea, I would love to know.
Because I don't know if it's got a glass of milk next to it.
I would instantly
like
be like,
a match made in heaven.
It's very strange that this cake is floating right here and not 50 feet behind me in the Great Hall. Like,
yeah,
if someone can explain that theory to me, I would love to know, because every time this comes up, I'm just like, I don't get why you eat it.
Yeah.
I just don't understand.
Well, there is a part of this, too, where the boys are smarter than they are in the movies. Like, the fact that he actually turns into Goyle, so he doesn't need glasses, and he realizes that. When they're walking down the hall together, they, you know, like, no, walk like this. You know, they're a little bit smarter at the beginning of this than they are a little bit later on, but it actually works in their favor because they're playing so dumb that it just seems like Crab and Goyle. So, I mean, in the movie, it's played a little bit more like they're not really controlling themselves enough. Here, it's played more, I feel like, in the book, that they are kind of just dumb and Malfoy's just dealing with their dumbness.
Yeah. Although, I do love that in the movie, there's that great improv line that Tom Felton does as Malfoy when he looks at Crab and Goyle and they said something about something being they read or they saw it in the library or something. And he forgets his line and his response is, I didn't know you could read. Like, that is probably the best line of this entire movie. And it's not in the book because he completely made it up because he forgot what to say.
And it was fantastic. It's one of the best lines in the movie.
It is. And it's totally missing from this chapter. And it would have made this section of this chapter so much better. So I felt myself, I prepared myself that it wasn't going to be there, but I still felt myself missing it. Mm-hmm. So well done, Tom Felton. Little round of applause for you there.
Well, and I like too that we get more, you know, when they meet up with Alfoy, they finally, you know, they have the run in with Percy and then they get into the Slytherin common room and they're reading this article about the trouble. And this is where I think it really connects with what you're talking about with why Ron might be, because there's this clipping from the Daily Prophet about how that Mr. Weasley is in trouble for bewitching the car and how Lucius Malfoy is trying to use this as the opportunity to get him out of the ministry altogether. And, you know, it's a really nice addition to add to kind of the larger framework of what's going on in the wizarding world because of what the boys did earlier in the book. Like, it has more ramifications, and I think that's really nice to see that it wasn't just something that, you know, when Miss Weasley sends the thing saying, the howler, your father is facing an inquiry at work, this is the result of that.
I always find it so interesting how political her books get very early on. So we've got, you know, the kids at school and they're sort of like kid politics, but she still manages to sort of, you know, weave in there a little bit of the, I don't know, of the adult world politics, like, you know, one dad trying to oust another dad. And, you know, and it shows like the impact that kind of has on a family. We see a lot of the politics in our day to day here. And a lot of times we don't see how that affects, you know, family. When you see really bad negative news out there about, you know, a politician, you forget like how are his kids reacting to this, whether true or not true, it doesn't matter, you know, or, you know, a successful woman gets kind of tore down for something. Like, how does her family feel about that? Like, how embarrassing is it for them? And how worked up does that make them. So I find it really interesting that she kind of weaves both those sides in here. And I love what Ron sort of like controls his anger and what he decides he's going to do for revenge against Malfoy when they're all said and done with their Polyjuice potion hour. So I thought that was really great.
Well, and it's so interesting too, because, you know, they find out that it's not Malfoy, but they also find out some interesting things, you know, that it's been opened. The last time is, you know, a mudblood died. And of course, you know, Malfoy's hoping it's going to be Granger this time.
Man, we also find out about, hates her.
Yeah, he really does.
I actually think he has a little crush on her.
I do too. I think he's got a little crush, and that's the way he takes it out. I also think too that it's really interesting that we get the mention of the Wizarding World prison, Azkaban, which is great. And we also find out that the Malfoy's house has been raided recently. And we hear about
they didn't find anything, Matt.
It's
not,
you know,
a big deal.
It's because Lucius has that, you know, secret cupboard that apparently nobody can find. So under the drawing room floor, I like how he tells them everything. It's great.
Which is so important later on.
It is.
It makes so much sense now.
No, it is awesome. And the boys are so excited with all the information. They, you know, obviously fake a stomach ache so they can leave because they're starting to change. And they get back and they find out that, well, Hermione, that the reason she couldn't go is because she's a person cat.
Yeah, because she's not a person. She's a cat.
No, she's, yeah. So talk about coughing up hairballs. Not good. Not good.
Yeah, I'm curious when we learn, we go on to find out like what happens, how she, you know, how she's supposed to, I don't know, get over it. Because when they get back, it's been an hour, so she shouldn't be a cat anymore. You know, she should just be Hermione again. So, man. That's a little karma right there, Hermione.
And it's interesting because, you know, the potion seems specifically made to turn humans into other humans, and that it's not just a quick change for her. You know, it's like there's something else going on now, and it's one of the ways in which Hermione ends up in the infirmary for the first time in this book. And so I love Moaning Myrtle too at the end. Wait till everybody finds out you've got a tail.
I know, that sounds so embarrassing.
It's pretty embarrassing. So
what? No, Hermione, I guess Hermione was not in the infirmary in book one, huh? That was Ron.
Yeah, that was Harry.
Yeah. Okay.
So a lot of people go to the infirmary in this one. So
yeah, that nurse has earned her keep.
Yeah, definitely. Madame Pomfrey's doing her job. So
she's a legit nurse here. Like,
absolutely.
Nurse witch, like, for reals. Too bad it's not like National Nurses Month, because like this would be fitting.
It definitely would. But I'm excited because we're really digging into the meat of this book, and we only have 6 chapters left, and so I'm really excited to get into this book, get to the end. I can't wait for book 3. And, you know, it's fun doing this. And Drea, if some people would like to talk to you about Harry Potter or anything else, where can they find you on the interwebs?
Sure. You can find me on Twitter at PCFChick and send me more pictures of awesome Harry Potter mugs or anything else. Or you can find me and my latest Pokemon addiction on Instagram at Drea Kaufman, and it's COFFMAN.
And you can find me on Twitter at MattRushing02. I'm also on the Instagram at MRushing. You can find me here on the network doing Aggressive Negotiations with John Mills as we talk about Star Wars every week. It's a lot of fun, so make sure you check it out. I'm on the Trek FM network doing a couple of shows, the 602 Club, which is our general geek show, and we talk about all the fandoms we love, not just one. So make sure you give it a listen. I think you'll have a good time. I'm also on The Orb with Chris Jones talking about Star Trek Deep Space Nine. And then I have one more show, and that is called Cinema Stories. And you can find that wherever you get your podcasts. And that is all about film through the lens of faith. And so thank you so much for checking your outpost this week.
Mischief managed.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.